Okay, so I got some really amazing questions from my listeners, and a lot of them are different from the ones that we had in our part one and two of our Q&A a couple of months ago. And if you haven't listened to that already, make sure that you do. I wish that I had the numbers of the episodes on my mind right now, but I love having you on the podcast, and we have so much to talk about. So I'm gonna get right into it with one of the first questions that I got for you, and it is, will intuitive eating help my body return to its natural weight set point? And if it does, can you talk about how this may occur?
Oh, I love this question. I've got a few similarly related to set points, so I'll speak in depth a little bit about that. The answer is yes. And also, I want to speak to intuitive eating isn't, and I say isn't because I was on the intuitive eating diet. It's not the hunger and fullness diet. It's not the don't binge eat diet. It's not the don't eat emotionally diet. Intuitive eating is simply listening to your body, your needs as a whole person as to what, when, and how much to eat. It's easy, it's effortless. And so when you have, I'm going to use the word healthy in quotes because for some reason I can't say healthy without having to quote it because of the wellness industry's wrapping healthy in a diet culture bow, and that's not okay with me. So when you have a quote healthy relationship with food mentally and physically, you will arrive at your natural set point weight. And that's really scary. And this is kind of answer one of the questions we had about how do you know what your set point weight is? It's really scary not knowing. It is scary not knowing, right? Because I had the fear, and I don't know about you, Sabrina, I thought I was going to keep gaining weight forever. And especially when I was allowing all foods and eating chocolate in excess because chocolate was the thing that I'd restricted the most throughout my dieting and restrictive days. I did eat a lot of that in excess, but I kept trusting my coach and allowing. And then eventually I started craving things like potatoes, broccoli, chicken, cheese. And because I kept allowing, it's really important to keep saying that and listening to my body and my cravings and myself, I naturally eat now a balanced diet. And my set point hasn't changed. I don't weigh myself, but my size hasn't changed in 3 years now. And I started my recovery about, oh gosh, 6 years ago now. It's not changed at all. I eat what I want, when I want, how much I want. So the answer to that is yes. And it's scary, but you just have to trust the process because the other option is to restrict and diet, and that sucks.
Yes, and I think what's really important to understand about your natural set point is that your natural set point might not and will likely not be your ideal weight or the weight that you believe or that you want to be at. Because if you're approaching intuitive eating with the mindset of, I'm doing this in order to achieve my set point, the intention behind it is so important. And that's what I'm always explaining to my clients is that, yes, of course, when you live in a society that is so fat phobic, that has such a focus on weight, we cannot possibly expect ourselves to just go from going your entire life wanting to lose weight to not caring about your weight at all. However, if you approach intuitive eating with this attachment, with this obsession with achieving your set point weight, and you're constantly asking yourself, okay, am I there yet? Am I there yet? Am I there yet? Then honestly, A, you're probably going to feel like you're not going fast enough. Like you're going to feel impatient and you're going to feel frustrated because instead of focusing internally on, okay, I'm actually starting to feel much better. I'm starting to feel more at peace. I'm trusting my body. I'm not having these insatiable cravings. But then you might feel like a failure because you're like, I really thought that my set point weight was going to be this number and I'm not there yet. And so I think that when you focus on achieving your quote unquote natural set point weight, a lot of the times it might not be the weight that you believe or that you had in mind. So I know that for me, I am really lucky that I didn't know what set point weight was when I went into recovery. I was really unaware of all of that, and so I didn't have this obsession with hitting it. But I now know that it's been about the same amount of time, 2, 3 years, that my body has not fluctuated. It's not going up and down. And when I was struggling with my eating disorder, if someone had told me that the weight I currently am at was my set point weight, I probably would have been really upset, because I had this obsession with thigh gaps and having a flat stomach. And so now, like, I have far from a thigh gap and I don't have a flat stomach. But the difference is that I'm really accepting of what my body is at now. And I no longer feel like this is not the body I should be in. I'm fully confident that this is where my body is supposed to fall at, because I am eating intuitively. I am moving my body. I do have healthy habits. And that's how I know that, like, okay, Sabrina, this is where you're supposed to sit at.
Yeah, I love that. And last part to say, and it's kind of a joke, but it's not a joke. Whenever my clients ask me, when will I reach my set point? When will I get there? My answer is, when you stop asking when you'll get there.
Yeah.
Because then the control's gone. You surrender and trusting the process, and then it naturally happens instead of keep wondering when. I know it's hard. It's so hard. But practice surrendering and trusting the process and taking one day at a time.
Yeah, and I guess I want to make sure that I clarify for anyone who is not familiar with set point weight theory, or what even is your set point weight, if you're like new to one of these podcasts, it's the weight that your body will naturally fall at when you're eating in a way that is not restrictive. It's not obsessive, but you're also not on the other side of the spectrum where you're constantly overeating and binge eating and emotional eating. So it's really that point where you're eating in a way that is honoring your hunger and your fullness cues, where you're listening to your body, where you are, I truly believe that where you are moving your body, but in a way that feels good for you. You're not forcing it because you're trying to burn calories or you're trying to lose weight. It's coming from a joyful movement intention, and you're taking care of yourself from a place of self-love. And so it doesn't feel, I don't know about you, but like for me, it doesn't feel difficult to maintain this weight, because it really does feel natural and it's not obsessive.
Yeah. And the point is, I'm not trying to maintain this weight. I'm just eating intuitively each day. And then this weight happens and it stays the same. And last thing about this, everyone's set point weight's different. And it's determined by genetics, primarily environment, healthy habits, and loads of other factors that we can't control. So ultimately, again, that word surrender and trust, one day at a time, and also looking at your choices. When your body's getting bigger and you're having difficult feelings about that, of course you will reach out for support. And it helps me to be like, okay, well, what's my choice right now? I can either go back to dieting and restricting, which I do not want to live in that restriction anymore, because also for me, towards the end of the eating disorder, I was binging anyway whenever I was restricting. So that didn't even work anyway. And I was miserable. So the only option is to keep one day at a time working through this food freedom and body love journey and arriving where we are, so happy and accepting of who and what we are. And there's no better feeling. So keep going.
That's such a good point, because I know that for me, when I was initially gaining weight and I would look back at the body that I used to have, I'm not going to pretend that I never looked back and thought, oh, like, I wish I had that body again, especially in those first few years. And whenever I would have those bad body image days, especially, I would always ask myself, and this is a question that I encourage all the listeners to ask themselves too, is what would it take for me to get back to that body? And for me, it would take sacrificing so much, my mental health, my physical health, my relationships, my social life. And so asking yourself, like, what did it take for me to be at my smallest weight? How did I feel at that smallest weight? And what do I think that that smallest weight would give me? Would it give me happiness? Would it give me health? And did it actually give you that when you were there?
Boom. Yes, Sabrina. Love that. Okay, this is a really interesting question I have. I'm really looking forward to asking you this, and then us both speaking about it. Do you think it's not helpful for ED to follow lots of recovery accounts and focus too much on it?
Oh, that's an amazing question. And I'm gonna say, I think it could be unhelpful. I think it could be unhelpful because it will breed comparison. And like I was saying about that impatience, whenever I start working with my clients, the very first week, I always say, if you approach a goal with an attachment of, I need to finally get there so that I'm okay, so that I feel better, so that I feel enough, then you will actually achieve that goal at a slower pace because you're putting so much pressure on yourself. And like you were talking about that surrendering piece, it is so hard. And I know for me, I've had to work through it with business as well, just surrendering with where you are right now. And I know that when I would follow all of these business accounts, I thought it was motivating me, and I thought that I was getting a lot of inspiration, and then I tuned into how it made me feel. And I think that's really important for the person who asked this or anyone who's asking themselves the same question, is it will be helpful or unhelpful based on how it makes you feel. And so, if you're noticing that it's actually giving you a lot of hope and you feel expansive and you feel good and optimistic and it's contributing positively to your life, then I think that that's really helpful for you and to keep doing that. But if you feel like it's getting to a point where you feel not enough, or you feel like you're not going fast enough, or you're comparing yourself to them, then it might not be, maybe like dialing it back a little bit.
Yeah, I agree because there's a reason why she's asked this question in the first place, right? So that shows a lot already. And all I would add on to the back of that is the comparison thing that you said. And also for me, in terms of personal development, business development, I don't know about you, but I was listening to about 50 different, is exaggeration, 50 different podcasts and courses and programs, and I was overwhelmed. So what I did, I was like, right, I'm going to pick three people, no more than three, and now it's honestly about two that I absolutely resonate with on each particular subject. And then I just stuck with that one or second person and only allowed myself to follow and listen to their content because sometimes people contradict what other person said, and then you're left like, what's right? And it's just so overwhelming. So just like you said, Sabrina, feel into what feels good. And I would narrow it down to follow, not only following two people, but in terms of their content and really being involved in that, one to two people, and then trust and follow their lead in that regard.
I'm laughing because we're so similar because I had the same, I actually called it a personal development burnout because I was noticing that what started as this really positive thing, and I was opening my eyes and my world to something that I had really never known about when I was younger, I realized that over time, I was more approaching it from the mindset of, I have so much to fix about myself. I have so much to do, so much work to do. And I was almost listening to these podcasts with the intention of like, fix me, give me all of the things that I need to know in order to be the best version of myself. And that's not what personal development is about. Like, you're never gonna be fixed, quote unquote, fixed. You're never gonna be at that finish line. And so, in the past couple of weeks, I've actually dialed it back and I tried, like, you know what? No personal development. I'm gonna just be, because sometimes you just need to allow yourself to be because your intuition gets to come through and you get to listen to what is best for me. Because I find that sometimes you listen because you don't trust yourself. And so you get to tune in and start integrating everything that you've learned and getting your own spin and your own perspective on it.
100%. We need time to embody what we've learned. We can't being obsessed with learning and bettering yourself is actually a form of distraction. And once we're aware of that and we be still, which I used to find very boring, but even me finding it boring was a block from allowing myself to be with myself, everything shifts from there. So I'm so glad you brought that up, Sabrina.
And I know that I want to move on to the next question, but I think this is really important to say because my business coach has really brought this up to my attention in the past couple of months, and I think this can be really helpful for this question. And when it comes to just listening to your intuition and doing what you need to be doing for your recovery in general, is to start asking yourself empowering and expansive questions and being okay with not knowing the answer right away. Because a lot of the times when we're following all these accounts is because we're like, tell me what to do. Tell me what's the next step. What am I doing wrong? What am I doing right? And your higher self always knows. And so starting to trust yourself and asking yourself like, okay, what do I need right now? And you might not know that answer, but that answer is going to come in the silence. It's not going to come in the listening to the podcast and the overly consuming content. It's going to come in the shower or when you're about to go to bed. And it's in the silence that your higher self is going to be able to talk to you. So getting comfortable with asking yourself questions, asking your higher self questions, and not knowing the answers right away.
Yeah, I love that. Always all about that, letting your higher self come through you, but she can only come through you when you give her space and quietude to actually communicate with you. Definitely. Yeah.
All right, next question. I have a few, but I'm trying to think about which one I want to go to. So let's talk about this one. What advice do you have for navigating social situations or events where there's a lot of focus on food without feeling anxious or being afraid of binge eating?
Okay, well, first of all, regardless of the event that's coming up, are you doing the work ultimately day to day to recover? Because of course you can't just do something different in one day and be fine. Because am I hearing the question right? It's an event that encompasses food.
Yes. Yeah, so I think this is really coming from the standpoint of someone who feels like every time they go to a dinner party or a wedding or something where there's food around. I know that for me, that was super triggering for me. I would feel anxious. I would be afraid of losing control. I would have a hard time focusing on conversations because I was like, oh, there's a sweets table in the corner. So how to handle these situations, I think more in a way that you're present and the food is not the center of your attention. Like you're able to enjoy it and be present and have conversations with people.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying. Well, first of all, unless you are nourishing yourself day to day anyway, unless, like I said, you're doing the work to have a free relationship with food, you're going to be food obsessed. Because if you're mentally restricting and or physically restricting, you're going to be hyper-focused on food and that's all there is to it. And because I always like both, and you can support yourself through situations like this by taking a moment before the event to be like, right, what's important to me when I go to this wedding party? Let's just say it's a wedding party. When I go to this wedding today or this evening, okay, so let's say what's important to you is to be present with the people around you, to enjoy the company, to dance, to let your hair down, and to enjoy the food unrestrictedly. So get clear on what's important to you before you go, and then give yourself full permission to eat and drink whatever is there and practice tuning into your body. Because the problem is, if you're restricting physically or mentally in general anyway, there either is going to be that I'm scared of the buffet, keep me away from it, or the fuck it button gets pressed. You eat everything that's not nailed down that you don't even want to eat because you're starting your diet again tomorrow and you're in a shame spiral, and you and I both know how that goes. So I would say give yourself a bit of space between your reaction when you go to reach the food. Do you want it? Can you enjoy it as much as possible? Remind yourself you're not going to restrict tomorrow, and self-soothe with your self-talk. Self-talk is very powerful and very impactful. So notice what thoughts are going through your head if you're afraid of the buffet table, and remind yourself with loving words of affirmations like, it's just food. It's okay. I'm not going to restrict tomorrow. This meal's not going to kill me. Like, whatever you need to do, and write these down beforehand so you can support yourself and you're prepared. But ultimately, the work needs to be done in and around the event, because if you're still restricting or you're not working through overcoming your fear of weight gain, you're going to be food focused. So I hope that's, you know, helpful, but you do need to be doing the work as well in the meantime. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a few things to kind of give my spin on. So you mentioned the first thing, which is to make sure you're nourishing yourself all throughout the day. Because a lot of the times when we think about binge eating, especially at night, we think of it as a night problem. A lot of the times it has to do with what's going on during the day. And I know for me, I used to, like, if I knew I had an event at night, I would have the mentality of I'm gonna save up my calories today. So I'm gonna eat
Same.
a low carb kind of day. I'm gonna eat a low calorie kind of day. And it's the same thing as, like, as if you went an entire week without sleeping well and you took like 2 hours a night, and then at the end of that week, you need to sleep for 14 hours. Like, your body is in deficit. And so the same thing happens if you have the mentality of, I need to save up my calories, and that can be really triggering for you. I know that it feels uncomfortable, but eating normally, like eating the same way that you normally would during the day. And for me, what has been really helpful is that, let's say I had a dinner at 6 p.m. In the past, what I would do is maybe I would skip my snack and I would have my lunch, but then I would go to the event and I'd be like really, really hungry. And so now I always ask myself, and this comes back to self-awareness and knowing yourself. I know when I'm hungry, I am not my best self. I am just excited to get food on my plate. I'm not really, like, I'm not fully present. I'm not my most authentic self. And it's how human behaviors is. It's you focus on getting your needs met. And so I always ask myself, even if it's like 5 p.m., okay, I'm already hungry. How will I be an hour from now? Or an hour and a half, 2 hours until I get food. And because I know myself and I want to be able to show up as my best self, I'll have a snack because of the kind of person I want to be for the people around me, because of the kind of experiences I want to have. And this goes back to what you said about what's important. What's important to me is the way that I show up, the experiences that I have, the memories that I make. And I'm so thankful because now I feel like I'm able to remember things so much more clearly. Like, I look back on some of the events that I used to go to. I look back on my sister's baby shower, the first time I was ever becoming an aunt, and I was really deeply struggling with my eating disorder. I don't remember the conversations I had. I don't remember the people I met. All I remember is being by the food table the entire day, running between the bathroom and the food table. And that makes me really sad. And now when I meet people, I remember their job, I remember their age, I remember who they are. So that's what's really important to me.
Because you're able to be more present because your mind's not fixated on the food, right?
Exactly.
For sure. And also, I want to point out that you need to be working on your body image, your self-love in general, your worthiness, because I remember I would not eat the entire day if I was going out in the evening. So my tummy could be as flat as possible, depending on what I would wear. And so, because I was so afraid of judgment and bloating and weight gain, whatever that meant, unless I healed that at the root, even though I was changing my food behaviors to support me, it's never going to change long term unless you're really diving into, okay, well, why am I so afraid of weight gain? Why am I so afraid of judgment? So we need to be taking such a holistic approach to recovery in general. Okay, right. What question shall I choose next? Okay, love this one. I feel safe when other people eat or drink calories, especially candy. Why is this?
Okay, I feel safe when other people eat or drink calories. Why is
Yeah,
this?
so what I'm hearing her say is, say if I was in the eating disorder and I was with you. And we were having a girls' night, and you were eating the popcorn, the candy, the chocolate. I would then feel, I want to use the word permission, to then do the same. Whereas if I was on my own, I would have such a big block around perhaps doing that.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's because you feel like you have permission. If other people are doing it, then that means it's okay and you have that permission. And I would say if you're having a really hard time doing that when you're alone, then a lot of it comes down to the way that you are talking to yourself, and your permission is not unconditional and it is conditional on the circumstances or the time of the day or what you've eaten that day or who you're around. And so if that's the case, then I would really work towards that unconditional permission. And this goes hand in hand with having that holistic view, because it's really hard to give yourself unconditional permission to eat if you're still deeply struggling with your body image. And I think that when you're around people, it's easier to kind of shut that voice up, that body image voice up, that fear that is so loud when you're alone. So I would say that if we're to dive really deep into the root cause, it's okay, where is the work that needs to be done on that self-love and that unconditional permission, not just to eat, but to let my body do what it needs to do to be at its healthy weight.
Exactly. And I think it also points to self-trust, doesn't it? Because an example for myself during recovery, I was allowing, in quotes, myself to eat pizza, sweets, things like that, but only if I was doing it with friends. So it was giving myself permission because someone else was, and that made me feel like it was safe to do so. I didn't allow myself to do it by myself because I labeled that as binge eating or whatever it might be. And also trusting yourself. So if you have trust that this is what my body wants and needs, regardless of who's around me, whether you want it or not, it takes away the needing to have permission if you trust yourself and your needs. So I think it's leaning into self-trust and how you can build your self-trust within yourself, not just around food, but within everything.
Yeah.
So a question for this person is to journal on this: how can you learn and support yourself to trusting yourself more in general and see what comes up?
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I know I used to not keep any junk, I say air quotes for anyone who doesn't see this, junk food in the house, because I didn't want to be at risk of eating that when I'm alone, because that's when that trust would completely, there was no trust there. And it was like, I know that if I start eating, I'm never going to stop and I'm not going to feel the judgment or the eyes of other people on me. And so I'm just going to, the floodgates are going to open and I'm going to eat everything. So a lot of it does come from self-trust. And I would also say, like, if you notice that you're only able to eat those foods around people, chances are you're not allowing yourself to eat those foods alone. Maybe you're not bringing those foods into your house. Maybe those are like special occasion foods. So actually practice eating those foods alone and being really mindful. Like, that's where you want to implement those mindful eating techniques, because a lot of the times we're not present with our food, we're not tasting our food, we're not tuning in to how it makes us feel, we're not allowing ourselves to slow down because we're like, I just want to get it in and out as soon as possible. So allowing yourself to practice that skill on your own, because when you can do that on your own, it actually becomes easier to do it around people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. So can you share tips for overcoming guilt and shame associated with eating, especially after overindulging in certain foods?
Okay, so guilt is a sign of you thinking you've done something wrong. So guilt's an emotion that is helpful. Let's say you, hopefully no one listening would do this, but let's say you pushed an old woman over and stealed a shopping bag or something. I want you to feel guilty for that, because guilt would then, perhaps you would go and apologize, make it right, learn from it, whatever. But when we feel guilt around food, it's, and I remember this feeling, it's like you've done something innately wrong. Like you've done something as bad as like rob an old woman or something. Mm-hmm. So I would question, and again, get your journal out, because a lot comes up when you're writing. I feel guilty. Guilt is a sign that I've done something wrong. What is it exactly I've done wrong? Okay, let's say this person says eating a lot of food or overindulging, I think the words they used, mm-hmm. was something that they see as wrong. I would ask them to actually question that. Imagine if that was in a courtroom and they were proving that, quote, overindulging was actually not, was actually, hold on, the opposite of the question, what I'm saying here. why is overindulging not wrong? And see what comes through. Maybe the person can think of something, maybe not. And that's when a coach is helpful, or just asking us in the DMs. Because in my opinion, what does overindulging even mean? Does it mean eating past fullness? Does it mean going over an arbitrary line that this person has created, and over this line it's not okay, and under the line it's okay? Where have you learned that? Most primarily from diet culture. So what does overindulging even mean? And then let's say it was like not listening to the body, eating past fullness, not feeling great. I'm curious as to why that's happened, because the question isn't, why am I binge eating or overindulging? The question is, where am I restricting, either mentally or physically, in order to have that reaction of the quote, overindulging? And then you've got another holistic approach of, is overindulging you in a way that you're attempting to try and get pleasure or peace or relaxation into your life? Like, where perhaps else can you be adding in whatever indulgence means to you, you know? Because for me, when I still do this every night, but when I used to binge eat this way, I would sit by myself with a lot of chocolate. It wasn't just the chocolate. It wasn't just the diet mentality I was rebelling against. It was the need to just be in my own space and relax, because I wasn't allowing myself to relax in the day for 10 minutes even.
Yeah.
So there's so much here. So I need the person in front of me to like ask what all of that means to them. But have you got anything to add from what I've shared?
Yeah, so there's so many ways that you can approach this, right? Because like there's so much behind it. So one of the things that you mentioned is like, this is actually a really good opportunity to get curious as to like, okay, what's the root cause of this? Is this trying to teach me something? Another thing that I would say is, when the guilt and the shame feels really, really heavy, like almost all consuming, a lot of the times is because you're making it mean something about you as a person, as like your character. So a lot of the times the guilt and the shame, if you dive deeper, it's going to be something, a language, a self-talk that's going to sound like, what is wrong with me? Or I am a failure. You generalize one situation, one event to your internal being, and then you start feeling like you are broken as a human being. And so what I would say is to, I really like making my clients journal on, what are some of the core beliefs that you hold about yourself? Like, I'm a failure. I can't stick to anything. I always give up. Because what happens is, if you hold on to this belief, and no one's waking up and thinking, today I'm going to think I'm a failure. Like, these are all things that are happening subconsciously. But when you start bringing awareness to that, the way that your brain works is that it always works on confirmation bias. It wants to show you evidence and show you proof of these beliefs that you hold about yourself. And so when a situation like overindulging happens, what it does, your brain will latch onto that and say, see, this is evidence that you're broken, that you're a failure, that you can't stick to anything. And so I would dive deeper and question those core beliefs that you hold. For example, if you believe that you're a failure, pretend that you're going to court and that you have to challenge this belief. Is it true that you are a failure 100% of the time? And are there other areas of your life that you can see and that you can notice where you haven't failed? Maybe you have an amazing family, you are a great mom, you have a great career, you're a really great sister. And once you start challenging this belief that you're a failure, well, you'll start to see is that you're able to handle these situations differently, because it's no longer a meaning about who you are. You're able to detach yourself and look at it from like a scientist of like, oh, that's interesting. Like, that happened. And what can I learn from it? It doesn't mean anything about me. What can I learn from this? How can I experiment? How can I make changes? Because it's not as heavy and as emotional anymore.
Definitely. And like you said, guilt is feeling like you've done something wrong. Shame, or feeling ashamed, is feeling like you, there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And this links back to, again, 99% sure on this with regarding to how the question was asked, fear of weight gain. And there's a lot of shame there. And that's not just linked to fear of weight gain and body image. It's linked to stuff in childhood about why are you not okay to authentically be you in whatever body size that is. So there's a lot of deep work to do here, but it is a case of being open to doing that work, journaling, asking the right questions, reaching out to me or Sabrina. And like you said, noticing what thoughts are going on in your head, building evidence against your belief. And then last thing I will share about Byron Katie's work, which I'm sure you've heard of Byron
Of
Katie, yeah.
course,
So
yeah.
she has those incredible questions. So I invite the listener to look up Byron Katie. She's got loads of free stuff on her website. You can ask yourself these questions around the limiting beliefs, such as I'm a failure because I've overindulged. Go through those questions. We're running out of time out, so I would ask them now. And then that really supported me throughout my recovery because, like Byron Katie says, you don't release the thought just releases you, and you find like a space of peace when you've done the exercises that she suggests that you do.
Yeah. Do I have time to add one more thing?
Yeah, I'm okay for time. I wasn't sure
Oh
if you
no,
wanted.
I'm okay for time too. I was like, I know that we're
Okay,
gonna
cool.
run long. One metaphor that has been really helpful for me and for my clients when it comes to that guilt is because a lot of the times diet culture has made you believe that you need to eat healthy, quote unquote, of course, quote unquote healthy, 100% of the time. And so the way that I would encourage you to start looking at it is you don't work 24/7. Like you have nights off, you have weekends off, you have vacations, because what would happen if you didn't have that time off? You would burn out within a couple of days or a couple of weeks. At first, when you start working, you might be able to do that for a couple of weeks. And then as you burn out every single time, that burnout is going to happen faster and faster and faster. And so there's a reason why we are intentional about having that time away from work, because we actually notice that when we get back to work, I don't know about you, but like after the weekend where I've had some time to recharge and to decompress and disconnect, you have a fresh mind and you're more focused and you're more productive. And so we never look at that rest time as, well, unless you have an unhealthy relationship with work, you don't feel guilty about it because you know that it's necessary because you would burn out without it. And so the exact same concept and idea can be applied to food. You might notice that if you're not intentional about having those foods that might not have the function of nourishing your body, but they have the function of giving you happiness and joy and of just being enjoyed, like nourishing your mind, then you'll notice that being intentional about having those in your life, you won't experience that quote unquote burnout, which is a binge, because you'll notice that over time, those binges tend to happen more frequently because the same way that if you don't take time away from work, you will burn out faster, more often. So actually, it's in your best interest to be intentional about including those foods that are there to bring you joy, because without it, you're most likely to fall off the wagon.
Absolutely. It's like sex, right? And yes, I'm bringing food and sex into the same conversation. If we only had sex when we wanted to make a baby, I mean, I don't want a baby. So I am not going through my entire life without having sex. Good luck with that.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. He's got, oh, he's got, so, he agrees with me, clearly. He agrees with me. So with regards to food, it's pleasurable. We have taste buds for a reason. So if we're only eating to nourish our bodies for physical performance or to get the quote perfect amount of macros and nutrients in, we're forgetting the point of pleasure as well. So it's okay to eat chocolate just for the sake of the pleasure of eating chocolate. It's okay to eat food if you're not particularly hungry physically for it, it's okay. And like you said, intentionally adding that in on purpose can create that natural holistic balance of a healthy, happy relationship with food. And you're not going from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah, 100%. Like when you remove this sense that you're doing something wrong and you're actually
Yes.
intentional about it, because a lot of that feeling of guilt and shame comes from feeling like you slipped. like you were doing so good and then you slipped or you fell, where it's like, no, if I actually intentionally took that step, then I personally feel like that guilt and that shame becomes a lot less strong.
Because you can own that shit. Like if you're on a wagon, you're going to fall off it. If you burn the fucking wagon, there is no wagon. And if you want to eat a tub of Ben and Jerry's, own that shit, enjoy it, eat it, and move on with your life, you know?
Yeah. And the last thing I will say on this is become aware of the language that you use. Language holds power. It holds emotion. It holds energy. And so I'm always really mindful. I'm sure that you do this with your clients as well. Whenever I hear language that is like diet culture language, like I have a weekly check-in for my clients. And when I see like, I need to get back on track, or I fell off, or any of those words, when you become intentional about being aware of the language, the words that you use, they carry frequency. And so diet culture language, if you like visualize someone constantly like getting back on track, then getting back on track inherently means like, okay, I'm back to restricting, or I'm back to like making it my 100% full-time focus to eat quote unquote healthy, or to be on my plan. And so become aware, and you can even have like someone in your life start calling you out on it. Like you can tell your partner, if it's someone that you trust, of course, or a best friend, or if you're working with a coach. Is like, I know for me, I am not aware all the times of the language that I use. And sometimes I'll get on a coaching call with my coach and she'll be like, you're using a lot of pressure words. Like I need, I have to. And I never, I should, yeah. And I don't notice this on my own, and I'm able to do it with my clients because of course we have blind spots within ourselves. So sometimes having someone call you out on the words that you're using, even just that subtle shift, that subtle awareness can be really powerful.
That's so key. And okay, last thing then, we will, because we can go on forever.
I know.
With that, like even if they're like intuitive eating and they're saying, I'm going to get back on track with intuitive eating, they're putting themselves on an intuitive eating wagon, which in my opinion is the intuitive eating diet, because dieting is not an action, it's a state of mind. So notice what language you're using. We don't like to not have a clear step-by-step black or white, because again, it comes back to self-trust. Trust your body, trust yourself, reach out for help, notice what thoughts and language you're using, and choose things that serve you and create freedom and love instead of control and, you know, restriction.
I think that's a really great place to end it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. We could go on forever, and we will do more of these. Again, we had great feedback, so let us know if you would like us to, because it's so easy. We put a question box, we have loads of questions. We have no idea what the questions are.
No.
We speak wisdom and knowledge, and it's really fun. So,
and it gives us an opportunity to talk every couple of months.
Exactly. And we love that. So thank you for hearing us. Thank you for your questions, Sabrina. Thank you for collaborating with me and making this happen. And I love you loads.
Same to you. And as always, send us a DM with more questions. We'll start gathering them up now so that we can have our next Q&A. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here, Victoria. I so appreciate you.
You too. Bye. I've just finished recording with the lovely Sabrina, which we will be releasing. I have no idea when that episode is going to be released, but we did a Q&A and we ran out of time to answer all the questions. So I just fancied just quick answering, a few of the questions. So I might be here for 10 minutes. I might be here for 15 minutes. Who knows? I'm pretty hungry and I do need to cook, but I just feel inspired to continue answering questions. So the ones that I didn't, or me and Sabrina didn't get to, but you've just got me answering the rest, I'm afraid. One question, how can I know how much I should eat? The answer to that, my love, is by listening to your body, by following your mental hunger and physical hunger, and by eating unrestricted for the rest of your life. I know that sounds scary because you'll have perhaps fear of weight gain, fear of losing control, but the only way to the other side, and I mean the other side, excuse me, being food freedom and body acceptance, the only way to the other side is through. And to answer again the question, how can I know how much I should eat? Your body knows exactly what, when, and how much to eat. So follow any hunger. If you're thinking about food, if you're watching YouTube videos on all you can eat or what I eat in a day or food challenges, you're fucking hungry. So eat. Okay. And that was, this is short and sharp. I'm obsessed with candy, but I'm afraid to eat it. How can this interest go away? Right. The reason you're obsessed with candy is because you're afraid to eat it. So my question is, why are you afraid to eat the candy? And when you keep allowing the candy with as much quantity as you want to eat it, you will start to be less obsessed with it. Now, I know this sounds very counterintuitive because when I used to think I was addicted to sugar, I would avoid sugar at all costs, eventually binge on it, and then I would have this confirmation bias of, see, this would be talking to myself, see, I told you you was addicted to sugar, you need to stay away from it. But when I allowed myself to eat whatever I wanted in whatever amount I wanted, the obsession, the addiction, so to speak, which I don't like that word, but the obsession with sugar started to fade away because I was allowing it at any point. So if you allow yourself to have the candy whenever you want to eat it, the obsession will go away. And in terms of the fear of eating it, why are you afraid to eat candy? What does it mean about you if you eat candy? And I can't coach you through the answers to those questions because I don't know them, but I would assume there would be fear of weight gain, fear of health complications, fear of sugar or diabetes, all of those kinds of things. So you need to be doing the inner work, the body image work, the inner child work about what weight gain means to you, why it's such a fear. We can talk about health because actually you can eat unrestrictedly and be healthy. It's a journey. Because your body naturally wants to be healthy and to feel good. So when you've got rid of all the rebellion against all the restriction you've been on, and when your body is nourished and feels safe that there is going to be enough food, you will then be able to choose nourishing foods as well as the candy and the chocolate to nourish your mental and emotional health as well as physically nourishing yourself. But you cannot do that when it feels like you're restricting or forcing yourself to eat, quote, healthily. Hope that makes sense. Let's see. How to live a normal life after an eating disorder, how to stop with all the rules. Well, living a normal life around food particularly is stopping with all the rules, right? The rules from the eating disorder are there for a reason. It's wired in your brain to be following these food rules. It feels safe. It feels like you're probably in control, depending on whether you're, quote, able to continue restricting or whether you're binge eating. It doesn't matter about where you are on that spectrum. It matters why you were creating the food rules in the first place. So think back to the first time you started to create food rules. What was going on in your life? How did you feel? Because that would have been serving you at some point. Otherwise, you wouldn't have created those food rules. So it's a case of diving deep and understanding why the food rules were created in the first place. To live a normal life after the eating disorder, it's very simple. You get to tune into yourself, your body, your heart, your intuition. Allow your body, heart, self, and intuitive self to guide you with what and when to eat, who to date, what job to go after. Like you, this is why on my website, I say I bring women back home to self-love and intuition. So intuition in all forms, like you know what is best for you in your life around food, around who you spend time with, around what you spend your money on, but you need to have that connection in order to be able to follow your intuition, right? So that's the work too. Also the second part of that question, how to stop with the rules. It's a case of asking yourself, why do I want to stop with these food rules? Is it severely affecting my quality of life, which I assume it is? Then what do I want instead? So a food rule is only beneficial if you want the result of what the food rule is giving you. And here's the thing about change and letting go of eating disorder, the rules and all of those kinds of things. The pain of where you are currently at, living in the rules, needs to be worse than the pain of the unknown of change to get to the other side of freedom. Until the pain where you are is worth, or the payoff, not necessarily the pain, not the payoff, the opposite to payoff, whatever the opposite to payoff is, if your life now, where you currently are, is not serving you in any way, let's say it's not serving you like a 9 out of 10, not serving you, and stepping into the unknown, doing recovery, letting go of the rules, which is going to be uncomfortable. Let's say the fear of that is an 8 out of 10, then you're easily going to recover. If the fear of that is also a 9 out of 10, you need a qualified coach or someone who can support you through this to ask you the right questions to show you that the path forward is a lot better for you. It's going to be less fearful than ultimately staying where you are and where you're going to be in 5, 10 years time if you stay where you are. Hope that makes sense. Another one, how to find balance between food intake and activity after ED when you are normal weight. Again, this kind of correlates to the last answer to the last question. You will naturally find balance when you've let go of the rules, when you're eating unrestrictedly, when you're listening to your intuition, when you're listening to your body, when you're sleeping enough, when you're self-caring, when you're doing things that bring you joy in your life, all these holistic things that help you to create happiness in your life in general, you will naturally find balance. With activity, I would say, whether it's the gym, whether it's a dance class, whether it's running, would ask yourself this question: would I do this activity, this exercise, if it didn't change my body in any way? Would I do it for the pure joy of doing the thing? Would I do it for the pure feeling of what it feels like after you've, say, been to the gym or had a PT or whatever, even if it didn't change my body ever? Then you know that you're moving for the right reasons, the reasons that are in alignment with you, versus should, need to, have to, in order to change your body or burn calories or whatever it is. An easy way to ask this question with anything, whether it's activity, what to eat, what to do, is this thought or is this behavior born from love or is it born from fear? And then ask yourself, what would love do? And then go and do that. And you'll get a lot of answers from within when you're asking yourself those kinds of questions. And the last one we did answer sort of with me and the lovely Sabrina, but I want to speak to it directly before I press end because I've only been going for 9 minutes. I know I'm speaking very fast. I'm trying to get as much in as possible before I end this. So Laura says, set point weight fills me with fear, not knowing what mine is. I feel you, Laura, more than you can imagine. To not know what my set point weight was, and I didn't know what it was at all because I started dieting when I was 9. So I had no point in my life where I wasn't trying to fuck with my food or my body. So I had no idea what my set point was. I did, however, look to what my mum and dad, what size they are or were, what my grandparents, what size they were or are, like depending on now or in the past. And that, although this is a little bit of like control, it can help soothe you through the fear a little bit to look at your parents and your parents' parents, what their size is. And if they haven't got a healthy relationship with food, meaning if your parents or grandparents are in an eating disorder or restricting their food or dieting, they might not be at their set point weight either. They might be over their set point weight if they're constantly binge eating in reaction to the diets that they've been on or trying to be on, or they might be under that set point if they're constantly restricting themselves and suppressing their set point. So that can only help if you have parents who actually have not fucked with their food. I didn't, but my mum wasn't as severe in the eating disorder or the restriction as I used to be. And my dad wasn't at all ever fucked up around food. So I kind of had a general idea of what my set point might be like from my genetics and my parents and grandparents. Other than that, I just trusted and took one day at a time. So just for today, I would practice accepting the body I was in, the real body that I was in right now, today, which is all I ever have at that moment, and practice accepting and surrendering to that. And then tomorrow, which would be in that moment today, I would do the same. And that can be really beneficial because fear can be saying things to you like, oh my God, what if I gain so much weight in this many months or weeks? come back to the now. Cross that bridge when you come to it. Surrender is a state of being in the moment that you get to choose through, first of all, mentally accepting. And accepting is not approving, it's just giving up the fight of the reality that you're fighting against right now. So practice letting go of the fight. It is what it is. Neutrality. What are you grateful for? That type of thing. And also ultimately invite yourself to be like, okay, if I were to go back to try to control my weight or actually lose weight, what would I have to do? How would I have to live? What life would I be living? Is it worth it? Fuck no. Okay, I'm going to choose to continue down this path. Because ultimately, when you know how to accept yourself and your body, when you come back home to self-love, it doesn't matter what size you are, you know, because you also get used to your body as you go, and you will arrive at a set point that is natural and healthy for you when you're no longer restricting and no longer binging in reaction to any restriction. So let me know if you have any questions off the back of this. I'm just going to post this randomly as an extra bonus episode. Love you all, and I will see you in another episode soon. Much love. Bye.